introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. I am here live recording with the Pocket Protectors podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason, and I'm back. We got everybody here. We got Eric, we got Luke. I'm a little mad at them because they just hung out without me out on the left coast. But we're gonna go through it. We're gonna talk about that, talk about some things, and let's hop right to it. Doctor, how's it going? Back to the familiar background, I see.
Yeah, this is actually my last week in La Crosse, Wisconsin. So this is going to be the last time this is a familiar background. But other than that, things are going well. It was fun to see Luke in LA. I don't know if I'm going to go back to LA anytime soon, though.
That's fair.
What was your beef with LA?
I mean, a beautiful place. The wedding we went to is beautiful. You know, I'm not accustomed to how aggressive the driving is there or how much parking tickets cost there. The food is great, though. I mean, you know, it's ups and it's downs. Tickets? The variance is high.
How many parking tickets did you get?
Let's just give you a total amount. I had $150 worth of parking tickets while I was there.
That's a lot of parking tickets.
It's actually not. It's not a lot. It's the number that makes me upset.
Wow.
They are more expensive.
Yeah, everything really is more expensive out there, huh, Luke? Everything really is more expensive out there, huh?
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, how you been, man? What you been up to?
I've been good. I've been mostly working on my 90-man roster breakdown series, which is not analytical at all. It's basically the stories of all the players, because at this time of year, the answer to every who's better question is basically, I don't know, whoever's going to have the better preseason. We don't know that. And it's super boring. So I go down through the histories of all the players, everybody all the way down to, you know, Craig James, camp body slot corner, and Chris Gonzalez, who's going to be a tackle or a guard. All the way to the guys that we know are going to be in interesting competitions like Mackenzie Alexander or whatever. And I just started posting that. So you can find that at Purple PTSD, and you can also find a thread of all the posts pinned to the top of my Twitter profile.
Which Twitter? Tell the people which Twitter they should be going to.
At Luke Brown NFL.
Would okay.
Be the Twitter that yeah. You can go follow if you want.
Yeah, don't go to Spoken Flow.
Mostly about. That one won't tweet about football.
Well, Eric, it's been a little while since we talked, but you've been a very, 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 very busy guy putting out a lot of great stuff over at PFF. And, I know you have your own podcast, but you and George, you move pretty quickly through some things there when you're talking about stuff on the forecast, which if you're not listening to listeners, you definitely should check it out. It's a great pod. We got our man, Eric. We got George in there. They talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I really can't do it justice trying to do a recap. You just need to go and listen to it. And I promise you, you will enjoy it. But this is, we're primarily Vikings-based here, and you guys did a breakdown of the NFC North where you talked about all the teams, but yeah, had some things in there that could be construed as maybe criticisms or doubts or worries, concerns about, our fully guaranteed quarterback, Eric. And I was hoping you might be able to just kind of walk us through why you maybe aren't as bullish on the Vikings as everyone else is saying that we should be.
Yeah, so also on this podcast network, David Stefano, he messaged me about it. He said something to the effect of, you sound like a Vikings fan who's also into analytics, right? So I will say that my numbers say one thing, But then my pessimism for what all things Vikings is only in how I talk and not necessarily in, you know, in my projections. But yeah, I mean, so with the thing with Cousins, and if you want to look at profootballfocus.com, just came out today, which is Tuesday the 3rd, quarterback clustering. So one of the things that we looked at is basically taking a collection of a quarterback's grades, so yards per attempt, air yards per completed pass, his grade distribution, all that kind of stuff. And we group these quarterbacks using a mathematical technique called K-means. Essentially, you can think about K-means as basically flattening all the data onto a sheet of paper and circling, making circles that put individuals into groups. And Cousins ended up in sort of the same cluster as players like Joe Flacco a season ago, and players that, you know, pretty, you know, weak and I think safe as well, which I don't think is a great combination. And so that was kind of like my first pass, is that, oh, you know, I thought Kirk, you know, I'm told all the time on Twitter that Cousins throws for 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns and no Viking in the history of the NFL, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But my first pass that it says, when you take away his supporting cast, he ends up being a quarterback who is in a third tier with guys like Flacco and players like that, Trevor Siemian, those kind of guys. And I'm just thinking to myself that we've seen how well he's done when he's had good supporting cast. He's in our second cluster in that case. But if I'm going to pay a quarterback the type of money that the Vikings are paying him, I need him to not be dependent upon the players around him to the degree that he is. And so that's mostly where my concern is. So, you know, you check out the forecast. I think I was a little bit off the cuff when I was talking about Cousins specifically, and also look at the quarterback clustering article, but I'm just a little bit bearish on him for those reasons, for the reasons that if you're going to pay a quarterback that much money, I'm sort of more of the Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady ilk than I am of the Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith, you know, Tyrod Taylor, those kind of players.
Easy there, sir. There'll be no Tyrod Taylor slander on this here podcast. Not while I'm editing things anyway.
I actually like Taylor. I do. I think the opinion of Taylor should be closer to the opinion of Cousins, but I think the opinion of Cousins is too high. Let me backtrack a little.
Okay. All right. So there's a couple of things you said in there. And one of the things I want to hop to, I guess, first off, as you're talking about it, because you're bringing up supporting cast. And last season, I mean, one of the things people, I guess, will say as a rebuttal to that right away is, you know, the Vikings have a great supporting cast. They have Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, arguably the best wide receiver duo in the league. They have Kyle Rudolph, who is, you know, decent at what they ask him to do. He's not going to get you much between the 20s, but he's very good in the red zone. You know, you throw it to him in the red zone, he, you know, will likely come down with it. He has great hands. And, you know, they added Kendall Wright, who has shown himself to be a productive wide receiver throughout his career. And, you know, the offensive line is, you know, Dalvin Cook is great. So, you know, it looks as though Kirk Cousins might have his best supporting cast ever. With that, you know, kind of being out there and what is around him, I guess, why still do you have the concerns about, you know, him and his supporting cast?
Yeah, well, so for one thing is I don't necessarily know that the Vikings are committed to Stephon Diggs beyond this year. And second to that is I don't know necessarily financially if they're ready to make the commitment to Adam Thielen that they should really make. I think Kyle Rudolph is nowhere near as good of a tight end as Vernon Davis, who is nowhere near as good of a tight end as Jordan Reed. And I think that the offensive line is, you know, does not compare favorably to the one that he had in Washington during those good years. And so, you know, and then the other thing is we know that supporting cast data is just less stable on a season-to-season basis than quarterback, you know, statistic, right? So I'm more willing to bank on who I think Cousins is than who I think that the Vikings supporting cast is. Not to mention the fact that, you know, we saw Keenum last season in a lot of really cozy conditions, being ahead, you know, only having to, you know, throwing from very advantageous downs and distances, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of that stems from the fact that things like the defense were healthy the entire year. And the offensive coordinator was very good. We have no idea if John DeFilippo is any good at calling plays yet. Right? We don't have a ton of data on him. And so, like, for me, it's just like I have a lot of uncertainty and I'm defaulting to a lot of, like, there's a lot of uncertainty with what will happen with the Patriots. You know, they're losing Amendola, Edelman's 4-game suspension, they lost Brandon Cooks, Gronk is, but I know the Patriots passing offense is going to be really good because Tom Brady's the quarterback. I fold all of, you know, Kirk Cousins into the uncertainty with the Vikings offense, and that's just not something I'm comfortable with.
I think in the long term, that makes a lot of sense, and it's why I don't think it would be wise to extend Kirk Cousins beyond this next 3 years. Though, within the next 3 years, both Diggs and Thielen, who I would argue are the most important facets of that, hey, we have a good supporting cast argument, will probably still be around. Diggs is probably getting extended imminently. And I believe Thielen's contract goes through 2020. So at least and Dalvin Cook. So at least the skill players will still be there. Now, obviously somebody could get injured and that factors into why it's so unstable, like league wide. But if we look within this particular single sample, and in the term that Kirk Cousins' contract spans over is the next 3 years, it at least shapes up to have the potential to remain stable, which is something that I choose to cling to.
Yeah, and one of the things inherent that, so, you know, Luke, you, even though you said your piece that you're writing isn't, you know, analytically based, it's depth. And I know, you know, you're digging in there and going through maybe some of the players that we don't know and some of the depth that people aren't as familiar with. I guess, you know, kind of the inherent, you know, I guess worry that's under there is, you know, injuries, and you're not really able to forecast or understand when those things are going to happen. How is our depth, you know, just generally speaking, but especially when you look at the offense and the people who are supporting, you know, Kirk Cousins? What does that look like as you've started to dig into things and really look at, you know, all the players that are on the roster and what, you know, might shake out after everything's all said and done?
On the offensive side, I think our running back depth is nice. You know, after Cook, you have Murray as a good backup. And I actually think the running back three battle that we're going to see in preseason is going to produce a nice RB3. On the offensive line, I guess make what you will of this, but the depth is small, like literally, like they're small offensive linemen, and they're all meant to be small and quick to the point where we have multiple basketball players, like former power forwards who are like trying out at tackle. And it really sends a weird and interesting message about what the Vikings are trying to do at offensive line. But in terms of like the quality of depth, I think there are a lot of players who aren't very good, which makes for decent backups. You know, a lot of Rashad Hill, Tom Compton, you know, Danny Isadora hasn't really shown anything worth hanging your hat on quite yet, though he's a fifth round sophomore, so who would expect that? And then at wide receiver, I think you'd be fine even if like you lose Diggs or Thielen for a little while. Kendall Wright's a perfectly capable player, and then you go down to after that you go down to like Treadwell, who is, I'm just not even gonna touch that. like Stacy Coley and a bunch of nobodies. So hopefully somebody comes out and takes that sixth wide receiver spot that's like worth hanging your hat on and being, you know, worthy of something. But at the same time, if you're playing wide receiver six, something has gone terribly wrong, and I don't even think it's responsible to plan for that.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess, Eric, when you look at things from a PFF perspective, I guess, what are your thoughts on the Vikings depth? I guess we'll start on the offense, but then the Vikings depth, just generally speaking, because I know that the JR, he shared a kind of a link earlier today where Chris Sims was kind of bemoaning the Vikings' overall depth on the team and kind of speaking to that as being a reason that he really couldn't buy completely into the Vikings as a contender or buy into the hype that the team was getting. And so I'm curious from your perspective, I guess, is he onto something there? Is the depth really that bad compared to what the depth might look like to on other contending teams across the league?
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. It's like we get stuck with this idea of like, oh, we only look at the Vikings and the Vikings have depth that we're not that comfortable with. So that's a problem. But I do think that you ask a great question is like relative to the rest of the league. I can't say necessarily the depth is any worse, but I will, you know, what I will say is that in the draft, they clearly had that as a priority in drafting Mike Hughes, and then drafting players up front, both on the offensive and defensive line that were not projected as starters. Going after, a tight end when I think they needed, like, they did a great job, I think, of putting bodies into place. And if a few of those draft picks work out there, I think that they are going to, improve there. But yeah, I mean, if the Vikings have one outside cornerback go down, now Mike Hughes is in the fold, but then the nickel corner becomes an issue, right? And there's, 2016 happens, and it doesn't really need to be that, I think, drastic, right? Like, if the Vikings have an injury along their offensive line, right, then, and if it's at a weak spot, I think that they are going to struggle. And what if they have another injury at running back again? Like, Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon were a good combination, but you take McKinnon out of that mix and now you only have Murray, and I think that that's not great. So, and of course, at wide receiver, I don't necessarily know who the third wide receiver is, and that guy's a starter. So I do think the depth is a big issue, and I think that they have to be concerned about that. And again, it's just, I think that that is part of what happens when you have to pay a quarterback that much money, and that quarterback is somebody who's dependent upon having a team around him that's as good as the Vikings, I think, are, top to bottom, 1 to 53.
Yeah, and you mentioned the offensive line, and it's something that people have brought up, and I know Luke, he talked about it in relation to Case Keenum a lot when we were going through last season, was, how good Case Keenum was at avoiding, pressure or not letting pressure turn into sacks. Kind of bringing it back to Kirk Cousins, how does he fare in that regard? Is that something that, is that a skill set that he also brings to the table where he would be able to do some of those things? Or when you've kind of studied him, from an analytical perspective, is he taking more sacks based on, the amount of pressure that are coming through?
As I understand it, and this is, a lot of this is based off the QB annual and like other QB work that like smart people have done, pressure causes a lot of turnover worthy plays. And that is a narrative that you can hear in like classic football terms, as when he gets under pressure, he tries to force things, but that manifests itself in like turnover worthy plays, be they fumbles or like tight window throws that he can't actually make that turn into interceptions. And like balls that are on the receiver, but not quite accurate enough. And then they turned into tipped interceptions. That happened a lot in 2017, and it happened a lot in the red zone too. That is kind of the MO of Kirk Cousins, is that when it's a clean pocket and that's really stable, he's amazing. He's like the fourth best in the league over the last 3 years with a clean pocket. But when the play breaks down, he kind of tries to play hero and takes risks that are unwise, whereas Case Keenum would play hero and run around and extend the play and then find a non-risky throw, and that is correct to do, whereas Kirk Cousins would just kind of heave something up.
Okay. Eric, you're nodding your head. So Luke nailed that one.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that the big thing with the thing that's the least discussed when it comes to pressured snaps versus clean snaps is the rate at which a quarterback deals with those, right? And so, yeah, Cousins is great when you give him a clean pocket. The rate at which he got a clean pocket went down by, I think it was somewhere between 5 to 10%, right? So you just see those rates a lot more. That's what makes, what somebody like Russell Wilson does so much more impressive. Maybe somebody like Drew Brees, who only faces pressure like 20% of the time, like, we not only see Brees in great situations, we see him in great situations a lot, and he capitalizes on them a lot. And that's why he's truly great, but that's also why he has such great outcomes, if that makes sense. So I think that that has to be the key, is like, we know that Cousins is great when you give him a nice cushion to play within, but we have to make sure as Vikings fans that actually happens at high rates.
That makes a lot of sense. And so I guess just based on the personnel, because I mean, that's the one thing I think that most fans, when they're looking at things, you look at the Vikings offensive line, and that is the one area of the team that, is a bit nerve wracking. It wasn't a great unit last year. I think that a lot of people anchored on that that early season performance, where I think the stat was, we're only team with no tackles that had given up a sack or something. But as the season went along, we had injuries, people got hurt. the line didn't end up the way they started. They weren't that great once you took the whole season in aggregate there. I guess as you start to think about things, I guess, what are you hoping to see? Because you mentioned John DeFilippo. We don't really know how he's going to be calling plays. I guess, what are you hoping to see from him to help mitigate some of those concerns that we likely will have to deal with across the offensive line?
I'd like for them to, and Warren Sharp's written about this, we've written about this, and I thought we've talked about this on the podcast. I think the best thing for the Vikings to do is to, until the league figures it out, put multiple tight ends on the field, put multiple running backs on the field, and throw on first and second down, right? Cousins has been great in those situations with Washington, whether it be play action or whether it just be simply getting that edge that all teams get when they throw out of heavy personnel. I think that to me, if you want the single biggest thing to do is to throw on first down, throw on second down, and do it out of heavy personnel, make other teams play in their base defense. And, the issue, of course, with that is that they don't have necessarily the tight end that's athletic enough like Washington did, but I still think the edge remains there league-wide. Like, the Jacksonville Jaguars were doing it with Mercedes Lewis. The Vikings can do it with Kyle Rudolph.
I feel like David Morgan's an important part of that, too. Unless Tyler Conklin comes up and plays really, really well and overtakes that second spot, David Morgan, the old spark god, like, he's not fast at all, but he's a very, very polished receiver and actually managed to, have a reasonable efficiency, if I recall, in 2017. And obviously he's a good blocker. So, like, if he can come in and be that, like, extra protection help, especially on the right side where they don't really know what they're doing, that can play a huge factor. And, yeah, DeFilippo likes to use two tight end sets because tight ends are weird to match up against. And if you put a tight end in a weird spot on the field, like putting Kyle Rudolph out wide, which I believe they've done in training camp, they've been like lining up Kyle Rudolph out at like the outside receiver position, that will create a mismatch. Or it'll just eat up an outside corner. And now suddenly you can put Diggs somewhere else where he won't be up against an outside corner. And that's an advantage. So you can generate advantages those way, just by messing with your personnel and then getting them in base defense, which is really, really important.
Yeah, Luke. And if I remember correctly, I believe that, obviously small sample, but David Morgan had a better PFF grade, I think, than Kyle Rudolph did last season. And then when you look at playerprofiler.com as well, you mentioned his efficiency, basically across the board in the efficiency stats again. Tiny sample, but I think it's now for both seasons. David Morgan, when he has had the opportunity to catch the ball, has done pretty well with it when they actually threw it his way. And so, yeah, like you said, he's not fast, but I think that he could be maybe is an underutilized weapon in the Vikings arsenal thus far, just based on what he's shown in the tiny bit of work that he's got so far. He's shown himself to be an efficient player. So,
and like, you don't need to be fast when you're an outlet receiver and nobody covered the flat and you have 9 yards of, you can run it out 7 yards and nobody's close to you. Like, it doesn't matter if you're that fast or athletic, because that's going to generate successful plays anyways, so long as the play design has a successful outlet play and you can, like, generate those situations. And what you can rely on David Morgan to do is, like, never screw that up. He'll never drop it. He'll never, waste those opportunities to turn pressured plays into positive plays, which is the whole goal and the whole thing that we are anticipating the Vikings will struggle with.
Yeah, Morgan caught all 10 of his catchable targets a season ago. He averaged more than 1.2 yards per route run. And as a pass blocker, not as efficient as Kyle Rudolph, but he had fewer opportunities. He only gave up basically two or three pressures. So, very good player. He was a player that graded extremely well for us. So there was the 2016 draft where Morgan and Kentrell Brothers both really flashed in our college PFF grading. Were two guys that I thought were going to make contributions on the Vikings. It looks like Morgan will, and other than on special teams, Brothers probably won't.
He's a backup. That's fine.
Isn't Brothers suspended too?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, they chose Gedeon over Brothers, right? Because Brothers could have been the long-term basically like a middle linebacker. They moved Kendricks out to Will or something like that. And that could have been something that they wanted to do, but ultimately not.
Be interesting to see if Gideon's targeted at all. He was like not targeted at all last year, and he was extremely productive in the run, which basically just tells me that all of our opponents were dumb and didn't put us in the base and throw it at the worst linebacker. Yeah.
Like the Colts did in 2016. Right. The Colts basically, that was the blueprint. It was to get Chad Greenway on the actually the
and
Washington
did it since.
Washington did it too, with Cousins. The they got Barr and Greenway in space against Vernon Davis and Reed and just ate him up. So
the 2016 one, right?
Yeah, that would be the approach I would take, and it seems like the most efficient one. And we get these interesting questions, right? So when the first time I came out with the, you know, tight ends are the most efficient pass play, people are like, well, won't the league figure that out? And I'm like, the league hasn't seemed to figure out half of these things yet, and until they do, continue to throw the ball to the slot receivers and tight ends because it's a huge advantage on a per play basis.
Yeah, and I think it was one of the things you guys talked about on the forecast as well. And it you know, speaking about kind of the tight ends, the heavy personnel, and the fact that, you know, every defense, it seems they kind of work, you know, their keys are on the run first and then figure out the pass. So if there's run action, make sure it's not actually a run and then go cover the pass. Like, why? Why do they still do things like that? Just given the fact that, like, you have seen when the Vikings have played Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, people always talk about, you know, Eddie Lacy went off or this running back went off. Like, Mike Zimmer basically tells the Packers they can run the ball as much as they want to when we play Aaron Rodgers, because we'd rather them run the ball than have Aaron Rodgers carve us up. Why don't teams or even the Vikings, why don't we just do this all the time?
You know, I think so. Football is a terribly difficult sport, right? Like, in terms of physically. And a lot of play and mentally too, right? And so to have a player who is both physically and mentally elite like that is so rare. In some cases, I'm assuming you have to coach a player to have, you know, these certain keys all the time. And it's probably not even NFL level. It's probably high school level. These kids have been taught to sort of follow their keys from like the first day that they ever played football. And it's difficult for those dogs, you know, to learn new tricks. I think that makes sense. And I think to me, that's 100% it. It has nothing to do, like, the linebacker's not, it's not going through the linebacker's mind that, you know, hey, this is a negative EV play that they're faking, so I'm just going to ignore it. Like, it just simply isn't. They're doing what they're taught, because if they have to think too much, I mean, football is too fast. They have to think too much.
Yep. That's fair. The muscle memory of, you know, you got to stop the run. The run is very important.
I'm 32 years old, right? Like, I'm the age of some NFL players. I started football like in the mid 90s, back when Emmitt Smith was winning MVPs. So, like, I learned how to play football at a time when running the football and stopping the run were the two most important things in everybody's mind, right? So my muscle memory is being trained way back then. Some of these players are still under that paradigm, you know what I'm saying? And I think that just really is it. And so if you're a team that, if you could take advantage of that edge, just do it repeatedly, I think.
Analytical edge.
Love analytical it. Edge. You have to analytical edge every once in a while.
We brought a little bit of that over here from the forecast. We love it. We love it. We love it. All right. Oh, yeah. Luke brought it up. And I definitely, that was the last question that I had written down that I wanted to ask you about is the red. Okay. Second to last question, but the red zone. And we talk about the red zone a lot. I know that in fantasy football, especially, people talk about the red zone because it's where, you know, most of the scores come from, is when we get to the red zone. But that was also an area that you know, you had some concerns when you were discussing, you know, Kirk Cousins. I think Luke talked about some of the concerns you had there, where I think you said in the forecast that, you know, the important thing in the red zone is to just not make bad plays. And one of the things Luke, you know, did mention there is that, you know, under pressure, Kirk might try to make a throw here or there that maybe he shouldn't. I guess, Eric, could you break that down for us a little bit further? And then I guess help us understand, because we do talk about the red zone a lot, like, how stable is the red zone numbers that we talk about? Because the sample is usually pretty small.
Yeah, I think that's really where you want to first go, is the fact that, like, these samples are extremely tiny. And even if you look, so I'm going to sort of crank out a few of these numbers here, but basically the idea is that if you just look at season to season, it's two or three times less stable, you know, how a guy does in the red zone, whether that be, I mean, PACR is not something that you want to look at in the, you know, Hermsmeyer stat in the red zone is not great because of air yards and things like that into the end zone. But even like on a yards per attempt, big time throw rate, turnover worthy throw rate, all of those things are very much, you know, unstable when, you know, you look at, you know, red zone kind of stuff. So, so this idea that Cousins has been poor there over the last, you know, two seasons is not necessarily my biggest criticism of him, because I just don't necessarily know if that's where, you know, if I'm going to be able to bank on that. He's had, you know, supporting cast issues with Jordan Reed being hurt and all that stuff. So to me, I just sort of like, I'm mostly of the ilk that I'll say it's unstable and I'm open to it being a trait. And I can tell you the things that you don't want to do in the red zone, which is, as George said, I think on our podcast, turn the ball over, you know, give yourself, you know, not give yourself an opportunity to win there. But it's not something that I'm going to look at. This was this way with Alex Smith too, and just be like, oh, this guy's a bum because he can't finish in the red zone. We're probably trying too hard, I think.
That's fair. And Luke, I feel like you've done some work looking at these things at some point over these past couple of years. I guess, what are your thoughts on the red zone in general and then what Eric had to say about it?
Yeah, I think just real quick with Cousins, a lot of the turnovers that have like ruined all of his stats in the red zone are fumbles, which don't have a lot to do with it being in the red zone. Like, it's not like it's a different, it's like, it's just bad ball security. It's like a fundamental thing. And that kind of feels fairly stable across like all the spots on the field. But in terms of the red zone, yeah, it's like definitely unstable, mostly on sample size, but also just because like the looks are different, like the defensive looks are different, and generally play calls are designed differently to compensate for that. So you could look at it as like, on these particular plays, you know, and that's if you're like a QC coach, you want to kind of look at, hey, you know, when we run like W missile, how does that, or whatever, like how do we do on that? And it's different plays in the red zone, so you can look at it that way. But in terms of what I would expect from Kirk Cousins in this year, there's something that John DeFilippo always preaches, which is high passes in the red zone, and those tend to be safer for obvious reasons, and like far less aggressive, which could possibly cut down on the like red zone interceptions, because a failure on a high pass turns into, you know, a sailed incompletion rather than a failure on like a tight window pass that turns into an interception and you get no points out of it. And I'm curious to know if like there's a correlation between like red zone turnover worthy plays, specifically like riskiness, not necessarily overall production, but like basically, is it safer for quarterbacks who have taller receivers to throw to because they can aim high and essentially make it so my guy gets it or nobody gets it?
Yeah, that's a good question. To confirm what you said, so the most actually, and I misspoke here, PACR is actually, the other than the number of attempts you have in the red zone, the number of attempts you have in the red zone as a quarterback is the most stable of the things that I've looked at in terms of red zone stuff. And then basically your percentage of negatively graded throws and your PACR are the two most stable things. But even then, those are of the 0.2 something-ish. Turnover worthy plays also very, so I sort of confirming there that your ability or inability to avoid, you know, bad plays is the trait, but it's not a very stable trait. But I do like this idea of, you know, looking at, you know, how much can you make safer throws by having differential targets down low, you know, having bigger receivers, back shoulder stuff, that kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, hoping to sort of thread the needle into smaller players down there. I try to figure out how to quantify that, but that's a very good point, Luke.
I think you could like look at the throws. I mean, you could look at like, hey, you know, you could like look at every quarterback's game by which receivers they had that game and then figure out, you know, these are the ones with the tall ones and did they do better. But like, you could also just look at like, okay, in the red zone, back shoulder fades and, you know, back of the end zone throws, or even like area on the field, like were those throws better or safer than throws at the goal line, or throws, you know, right in front of the goal line, or throws in the like middle of the field. And I wonder if those throws are safer on aggregate over however much data that you'd have access to, because I think that would go a long way when you have a volatile quarterback, like a boomer bust quarterback like Kirk Cousins is. But not necessarily, I don't think that that would help you as much if you had like a very conservative quarterback like Tyrod Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Again with the last question, Eric, last question for you with the QB clustering stuff that that you guys have done. I think right now, from what I've either heard from you guys discussing on the pod or seen, is that you've been breaking it out, it looks like, season at a time. As you move forward, are you going to kind of tell us what a quarterback is over like a larger sample? So you just say, you know, for their career, you know, player X is a this, and, you know, our degree of confidence in that is this because of, you know, the sample or whatever it might be. However you would do that, I guess, is that something you guys will also be doing?
Yeah, we have the capability of doing that. My issue with doing that, and for the people that want to, you know, to think about Cousins, he's, you know, second tier player over the course of like the 3 year sample we just looked at. So he does elevate himself a little bit because of 2015, 2016. My concern is, for the very reasons I have concerns about Cousins in general, is that when you group a player from one season to the next, there's a big discretization in the surrounding players and surrounding coaches. So I think that that's why I always sort of gravitate towards season to season, but I can see why somebody would want something like that. And we have done that, and it's exactly what you think. The Ryans and the Bradys and the Breezes and that kind of thing are in one, you know, tier, and the Cousins are in sort of that secondary tier, and he fell off last season.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess, you know, that that's one of the things that you've talked about a lot, and I think it does make a lot of sense, is that I guess you could, even as you're making those decisions, you know, it's those guys who do bounce from tier to tier would be the ones that you would want to try to get at a discounted rate versus the ones who are consistently, you know, able to perform regardless of what's going on around them. So that does make a lot of sense. Shout out to Russell Wilson. But like, I worry about Russell with Brian Schottenheimer coming in there.
I just watched the Football Life on Marty Schottenheimer, and yeah, I didn't make the connection till just then that that's his son. So Marty was a pretty good coach.
That he was, you know, and that's all it really takes, you know, to have a dad who was a really good coach, and then you get to coach forever. Apparently,
Norv's son, what's his name? Brian Turner or whatever.
I don't know.
Ted Luke, Turner. I don't even know.
Employed forever, Turner, I think is his actual name. But I think that's it. That's all the analytical stuff that I think I wanted to go over and cover with you guys today. Yeah, Luke, anything else you wanted to cover? Pitch, plug before we get on out of here.
There's, when we were talking about depth, there's one thing that I forgot to mention. And we talked a little bit about like how old timey philosophy was like, stop the run, stop the run, stop the run. The way that our defense is composed, and this is something that I've kind of picked up as I've been going through like every player on the whole 90, all the way down from top to like the bottom players who are never going to make the team, is extremely modern. That is to say, they have almost no run stuffers on the 90. They've got, I guess you could call Linval that. I guess you could call Jaleel Johnson that. And David Perry's the only one that is like specifically only in football because he's good at stopping the run. And everybody else on the entire defensive line is built to rush the passer. And the linebackers have a very, very similar theme. There are very few like old school, you know, like EJ Henderson style thumpers. They're all guys who are meant to either cover or meant to be hybrid pass rushers. So there's definitely a lot of commitment to rushing the passer from a bunch of angles, which is an extremely modern idea. And even in terms of like depth, the most depth that we have right now, and will probably be a lot different once all the cuts are made, but at the current moment, there's a lot more depth at slot corner than outside corner, which I find absolutely fascinating that they just have thrown more mud at that wall. So the whole depth of the defense appears to reflect a very, very, very modern philosophy, which I think is a point for optimism.
I mean, Zimmer listens to the forecast.
Zimmer listens to this podcast and the forecast. It's clear to me.
I think it's the athletic
data. All the DBs. All the DBs.
All the I actually think with the new kickoff rule, they're going to have more DBs on the 53. So that's also some place to look if you're wondering.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
That might be the reason Marcus Sherrills remains on the roster for another year.
Forever.
And forever. Ever, and keep ever, Sherrills ever. On there. Give us all hope.
Forever. And Eric, busy man here. What's on deck for you? What do you got that we should be looking for on I guess the airwaves at PFF, you'll be writing anything new for us at PFF. We're gonna see your mug on YouTube at PFF. What's going on, man?
Yeah, so next week is my first week living in Cincinnati, working at PFF. We'll certainly have some of those YouTube videos that we've been putting out. I'll be a part of those. This on Thursday, we have the NFC North preview. We're going to do a little bit of a write-up on that to sort of expand upon what we did on the forecast a couple days ago. And of course, the customary, anytime Lewis Riddick wants to tweet out a Bible verse in disguise, I will interpret that for you guys in the back row. So that's kind of fun. But yeah, pretty exciting times for us as we're moving to Ohio in the next week.
Fun. And our man Jabril Preppers will probably be lined up in front of your house when the Browns take the field. So that'll be fun. That's fine. Well, that's it. That's all we wanted to cover today. Eric, Luke, it's been too long. Very, very, very glad to get you both back on. Still in my feelings a little bit that you guys got to get together and hang out and have some, what was it, ramen, Luke? What did you guys end up eating?
A little bit of classic K-Town ramen.
See, getting together, getting some K-Town ramen. Couldn't even, freeze dry some and send it my way, but it's all good.
We have to have sports analytics conferences in Canada. We have to get that started. We have to get on that train here.
Now that you're not in Wisconsin, I feel like we might actually be able to come visit you now. I mean, like Ohio,
right.
A little bit better than Wisconsin.
We have Tim Hortons in Ohio. I had Tim Hortons when I was in Cincinnati last.
On it. Let's see, there you go. I can definitely go. It's safe territory for me. I know there's a Tim Hortons there. It's like an embassy.
right.
Well, that's it. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us here. Luke, Eric, thanks for coming on. And we will talk to you guys soon. Have a good one.